You shouldn't have. A Tongariboshi no Atari potfake, written by Lily Pili Beetle and read by Alani. Summary. It was a shirt, if it could be called as much, diaphanous, sheer and delicate, embroidered on the shoulders and tailored to hang in sheets of fabric so thinly woven he could barely make out the individual threads. Not a shirt then, almost more of a cloak or a drape. It fluttered in the warm breeze and, not knowing what to make of it, he set it carefully aside and peered once more into the box. Chapter 1. Clients were always giving Onurugyo gifts. Boxes of fancy fruit, expensive dried seafood, rare vintages of wine, colorful spoon sweets crafted to look like candy birds that had tasted, somewhat disappointingly, like nothing at all. Often the gifts were in thanks for the work he'd done, and the client's satisfaction with the final contraption, but sometimes the gesture felt more like a display of conspicuous wealth rather than any sincere act of gratitude. Either way, it was none of Olurugio's business. He'd drink their wine, pass along the fruit to the girls, and trust the seafood in the Kifri's hands for dinner, because his real interest was less about the compensation, though that certainly was a part of it, and more about the puzzle of solving a new spell, more about the need to keep his creative compulsions at bay for just a little while longer. His latest client had been a warm enough host, at her request an intriguing one, a massive picture window that showcased a different view of the estate every day. Though it took some doing to work out the mechanics behind it, once he'd figure out the how of it, it was a fairly straightforward matter to implement. All in all, Onurugyo had only been away from the atelier a week, which wasn't too bad in the grand scheme of things. But he was creatively and physically tired, and the oppressive heat of high summer did nothing to help his exhaustion. When she offered to foot the bill for the Pegasus coach, he easily accepted, much less fiddling about with the windowways in the Great Hall, and much faster than traveling with silk shoes and heavy bags. He slouched against the cushioned bench inside the carriage and sighed in relief, grateful to be headed home to the austere, rugged beauty of the Nakivan Downs, content to let the wind from the open window tussle his hair into a mess beyond saving. Outside, the jovial whistling of the coach driver provided friendly accompaniment. Nestled around Olurugyo were a collection of new treasures, for his latest client, like so many others, had insisted on sending him home with tokens of showy appreciation. Beside him on the seat sat a shallow blue box that he tossed inside as he'd climbed aboard, and finally, 200 feet in the air, his curiosity got the best of him. He pulled it closer and shook loose the lid, and inside, he found thin, creamy-colored paper folded neatly around its contents. He parted the paper, and the gift beneath looked to be fabric of some stripe. Two pieces of something. He dusted off his hands and lifted the first piece out of the box, holding it up for inspection. It was a shirt, if it could be called as much, diaphanous, sheer and delicate, embroidered on the shoulders and tailored to hang in sheets of fabric so thinly woven he could barely make out the individual threads. Not a shirt then, almost more of a cloak or a drape. It fluttered in the warm breeze, and, not knowing what to make of it, he set it carefully aside and peered once more into the box. The lower half was clearly meant to match the top, white robes that sat low at the waist, thankfully more opaque than their companion, but the material was a cool, slinky sort of weave that pulled against his hand like a liquid. It was, he realized with a creepy sense of alarm, a very loaded present. She'd sent him home with a gift of very expensive, very risque sleepwear. And when the thought fully formed in his head, he nearly choked. He hastily looked around the cabin, but of course there was no one there to witness his distress, just the lazy, measured flap, flap, flap of the Pegasus' wings. Again, Olurugyo looked into the box. From one artisan to another, he could tell that the set was a work of supreme skill from a deft hand, and that alone caused him to push both items hastily back into the box and fold the paper back in place. As he slid the lid back on, he blew his hair from his eyes and decided to find a home for it somewhere in the back of his atelier. Because even if it had been his style, black, there was no way he could wear such a thing. She clearly didn't know him well if she thought he was a fitting recipient for something so fine. Not with his cloak perpetually smelling of smoke, and his nails rimmed with ink stains. His rumpled shirt should have given away the fact immediately. Wearing such a thing would be, he reasoned, like garnishing an everyday dish. Gold leaf on mashed potatoes, shaved truffles on a piece of toast. Too ostentatious by half and undeserving, really. Kifri, though. His client, a lady from a rising house, had been extremely complimentary as he worked, and very attentive on a personal level. She'd leaned over him to peruse the final work, hand lingering against his shoulder, and only now did the pieces really fall into place. He barked a single, incredulous laugh. It's not that she wasn't charming, she was, with her dark waves of thick hair and quick, easy wit. But she was barking up entirely the wrong tree. The wrong tree in the wrong forest. He made up his mind then to politely claim prior business engagement should she call again. When the coach arrived at the atelier later that afternoon, he stepped out from the shade of its interior onto a lawn of sun-baked grass, desperately in need of a good drink. The door to Kiefer's atelier was shut tight, the windows closed with the curtains drawn, and it seemed, to Lurugio's well-trained eye, that the professor and the girls were out for the day. A bit of a disappointment, but they'd surely be back by dinner, and this way he'd have enough time to decompress in the quiet of his own little atelier. He thanked the driver and pressed some coins into his hand, then shouldered his bags and trudged through the thick heat to the door of his building. The heavy view of his cloak always seemed like such a bad idea in weather like this, but protocol had to be maintained. The rest of the afternoon was something of a blur. He unpacked, bathed, compiled his notes from the trip into a book, and then, long overdue, climbed into his bed for a nap. His mind was ready for a long afternoon rest, even if it threw off his schedule beyond what it already was. And it was already a nightmare. In the dark of his stone atelier, the heat still managed to find him. He pushed the thin blankets as far as they would go, and tugged at the front of his shirt to allow a little more circulation. He considered dashing off a quick cooling spell, but he left his quire on his work table, and that was all the way across the room. Allowing himself a groan of tired frustration, Olrugi rose from his bed and started across the room. As he did, his gaze landed on the blue box, still as he had left it on his work table. Olrugi paused and scrubbed his chin. He made a low huff, then reached out and lifted the top of the box again. Inside, just as flirty as ever, was the gift. He squinted suspiciously at it. But why the hell not? Might as well try the thing on, before he consigned it to the darkest corner of his already cluttered atelier. With a sigh of defeat, he dragged off his white shirt from his body and tossed it to the side. Then, carefully, he helped himself to the new shirt, letting its gauzy fabric drift into place along his skin and lay flatteringly across his shoulders. Huh. The bottom robes, too, fit perfectly, and though they almost certainly weren't fireproof, he figured they'd have to do. And when everything was in place and felt just as intended, he glanced down to reluctantly admire the gift. He felt quite a few things, really. Cooler, mainly, which was something of a relief. He twisted in place, and the fabric followed his movements in a way he wasn't accustomed to. Beyond that, he felt, he supposed, strangely good. The kind of good that only comes from wearing something new, and perhaps a shade too expensive. But he also felt grudgingly self-conscious, and was grateful that even the brush bug seemed to be away for the day. The last thing he needed was judgment from a grimy little ink thief, even if it was cute. Olrugio cleared his throat. He debated taking it all off and stuffing it back into the box. But something stayed his hand. Batting away the feeling of quiet embarrassment, he headed back to the bed and when he fell back into the nest of pillows, he already felt more comfortable. Maybe he could see the appeal. Chapter 2. He woke up famished. It was, by all appearances, the dead of night, and Olurugio was suddenly ravenous in a way he couldn't remember being in ages. It made a certain sense. The last time he'd eaten was mid-morning, just before he'd stepped onto the Pegasus carriage. He hadn't visited the kitchen when he'd returned home, and if it was truly as late as it looked, then it was no wonder his body was rebelling. He pushed himself up onto one hand and dragged his wrist across his eye in an attempt to rouse and refocus himself. There was nothing to be done for it, though. He'd simply have to walk all the way to the kitchen, help himself to whatever he could find in the pantry, and return to try and get a few more hours of much-needed sleep. Cursing, he climbed from the comfort and familiarity of the bed and tapped his slippers onto his feet. He passed through the arched doorway, across the bridge, and over the floor of the still, silent main atelier, and yawned deeply as he took the steps towards the kitchen, where his mood was immediately lifted by the signs of recent life. A vase of fresh flowers, a traveling bag left hanging over the railing, signs of a dinner recently tidied. If they were back, and Kifri had been cooking, that meant food. He looked through the nearest cupboard, lifted the top of the dragon's egg, nothing. And finally, peeked beneath a cloth draped over a conspicuous-looking plate on the counter. Beneath were a few remaining hand pies, their crust a flaky golden brown, the crimp along the edges of two of them neat and precise, while the third was a more earnest and polished attempt. Something like what a 12-year-old might do. He helped himself to the nearest pastry and took a bite. The feeling was something he couldn't quite place. Roasted yam with a kick of something spicy, but delicious all the same. Have you finally given in and become fully nocturnal? Olurugio turned, caught in the act. Kifri, dressed for home, gave him a mysterious little smile from the doorway and stepped into the room.
Hello, Tutu.
Olurugio lifted the pie in a gesture of thanks.
It's really good. I like this one the best so far. I like the, yam? Or squash, or whatever it is.
You're very welcome. Talia's smile stayed where it was, and Olurugio considered it as he ate. If he wasn't mistaken, Kifri was on the verge of giving him a hard time, albeit in a good-natured way.
What's this look for?
Olurugio squinted across the room. And then, in a rush, he remembered something that had seemed unimportant in the immediate pangs of nocturnal hunger. He was still wearing the nightshirt. The bottom too. He was still wearing the gauzy, nearly see-through nightshirt. And there was nothing he could do about it now. All at once, he pushed the rest of the pie into his mouth and chewed as if his life might depend on it. He was keenly aware of the warmth spreading across his face, and he scratched casually at the side of his neck. "I'm always glad when you're home safe," said Kifri. How was the trip? He drew out the nearest chair at the table and lowered himself into it, then leaned back and crossed one leg over the other, easing himself into a conversation that Olurugio was not prepared to have. Olurugio swallowed. His throat was dry. Why couldn't she have sent him home with wine like the rest of his clients?
Good, yeah.
Perhaps, if he moved away from the glow of the lantern, the effect would be a little less dramatic. He took a step back, away from the table. That's all. Kifri canted his head ever so slightly, and Olurugio knew the subtle cues of Kifri banter when he saw it.
Long, hot.
Olurugio said in an effort to maintain his casual air, not taking the bait.
Happy to be back, and I, brought the girl some mountain apples.
Very thoughtful, said Kifri, leaning forward and propping his chin in his hand. Just beneath the curve of his palm, Olurugio saw the smile grow, and that was enough for him. He crossed his arms across his chest and looked directly, pointedly at Kifri.
Go ahead, say what you're gonna say then.
Kifri made no attempt to deny it. He laced his fingers in his lap and leaned back, the chair creaking in quiet protest. I think you look lovely. In a smooth, liquid motion, Gifty rose and crossed the short distance between them. He circled to the side and gingerly reached out to touch the hem of the shift, his expression thoughtful. Lovely had not been what Olorugio had been expecting to hear. Other, more deprecating words flitted through his mind as possibilities, but he pushed those away in irritation.
Hard to wear the...
Olorugio glanced towards the door.
Other stuff at night, and just a lot heavier.
I assumed. Kifri's expression was something he couldn't recall seeing before. Olorugio watched as his fingers fell from the hem, and he'd be lying if he didn't feel a pang at the loss. Truthfully, it's about time you bought something for yourself that wasn't supplies for a project. Nice paper doesn't count.
Well...
Olorugio's mouth pressed into a thin line, and he found himself reluctant to clarify the situation for reasons he couldn't quite pin down.
This one was a gift from my patron.
Even with the fall of Kifri's hair obscuring his eye, Olorugio could tell that not one, but both of Kifri's brows had lifted straight up. The optics were admittedly bad. As if to reassure Kifri that their relationship was strictly professional, at least on his end, he lifted both hands in protest.
Don't draw any wild conclusions. I just write the spells. Whatever they send me home with is their own, you know, business.
Hard to fault her for her taste, Kifri mused as he took a step around to the other side.
Don't encourage them.
Their lords and ladies of the high noble houses were entitled enough without letting them off the hook for it. Olorugio eyed the remaining pies on the counter, but decided to refocus on the conversation at hand. Or he would have, had he not suddenly found a warm hand pressed to the bare skin of his chest. You are quite cool, at least. All thoughts of foot vanished. Instead, he blinked in surprise and took in the sight of Kifri's long, delicate fingers spread across his skin. How did he keep them so free of ink? It's good to have you home, Kifri said after a long pause, and, after a cursory little rub, took his hand away. Please stay for a while, if you can. We miss you. Olorugio quickly licked his lips.
You've got to tell me about your day trip. I want to hear how it went.
It was an invitation for him to stay, and perhaps to join him for a late-night ring, but he knew he was too late. Kifri was already headed out the way he'd came, back in the direction of his own rooms. I'd be happy to, tomorrow. In the meantime, please get some sleep. Kifri looked back over his shoulder, meeting Olorugio's gaze from beneath his long lashes. You'll be no good to your patrons if you're exhausted. Olorugio stood in the kitchen, wearing a small, uneven smile of his own. The end. Recorded for Summer Potwix App 2025 for Ilurhir. Ilurhir, I hope you enjoyed it. Lily Pilly Beetle, once again, thank you so much for giving me permission to potfake this. And everybody, go give the original fic all of your love. It really deserves it. As always, don't forget to stretch, drink water, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye!